Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you use it to advantage. Check it out when you get a chance, and it'll help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Don't forget to check out all the different things that are there that are available to you. And boy, howdy, if we got some exciting new stuff coming at you. It's probably going to be a little while, probably toward the end of the year, but just hold on to what you got. You're gonna like this new stuff, and can't wait to. But we're working hard on it. But just wanted to tease you a little bit there. Joan Pride is our guest. I like teasing her too because it's fun. She's our good friend. She's been with us a long time on the Brain Trust, and she joins us every week to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world there. She's senior editor there. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hi there, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Yeah, you're all on Twitter, aren't you?
Oh, as always.
Hey, Joan, I just had Stephen Covey on my show in the last hour.
And how was it?
You know who Stephen Covey is, Seven Habits of Highly Effective and all that. So anyway, he's a great guy. But the reason I brought him up is because he and I were talking about, you know, interpersonal relationships and things like that and using it in our business. But for some reason, he brought up the spouse thing.
The spouse thing?
Yeah, you know, how to be more, you know, happier with your spouses and things like that. And, of course, in his case, in my case, the spouse is a wife.
Right.
Which is a different species from the spouse being a husband.
That's, well, completely different, yeah.
Yes. And so he said he has found, that, or someone told him once, I've forgotten how he said it, that in order to have the best marriage, don't try to make your wife better, just make her happy. What do you think about that?
Oh, just try to make her happy. That should be your job, 24/7.
Yeah. Not try to make you better. Make her happy. Make
right.
me happy.
Works for me.
So I'm supposed to live for your happiness. Is that what you're saying?
If so,
I'm
you didn't
spouse?
Know that until just now.
Well, you know, I just wanted to know what you thought about that. That's what Stephen Covey said, and if he says it, you know, it must be true.
Right. Hey, I'm all for it. Sure.
So you're a new fan of Stephen Covey now, right?
Definitely. Definitely.
And just so that you know that I'm not, they don't call me the king of Segway for nothing, Joan. How do you think all that flies in China? Are you there?
How being a good spouse flies in China?
Do you think that the Chinese men try to make their wives happy, not make them better?
Wow, boy, I have no idea. What do you think?
Well, I don't know, but you know, that may be the reason for your lead here. U.S. China tensions are boiling over. I wonder if it's because the guys aren't making their wives happy.
Boy, there's a stretch.
Told you, I'm the king of Segway, Joan. You work with me here.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Maybe it's just because the guys aren't making their wives happy. What do you think?
It could be. They may be happy within China. It's just that they're not happy with the U.S.
Oh, that's what it is. Well, you know, you guys got to
read these letters, you know.
You guys don't point any of that out here in your lead, but you do say that there are some tensions which are boiling over, and tell us what that means.
Well, as you know, and we've talked about many times, China has really been eating our lunch in the trade area, and we're very concerned about it. And we're also concerned, and being the currency expert that I am, I know that there's a lot of concern about China's currency. So there's just a lot going on that worries the United States. But the first thing we start out talking about really is counterfeiting, which is
right.
driving U.S. business people crazy.
Well, see, the only way that we're going to be able to compete with China is to differentiate ourselves from them, because we can't make things cheaper than they can.
Right.
Remember, I still can't get that commercial out of my head, the Hush Puppy commercial, where the little Asian guy or the Asian guys are holding up a Hush Puppy. you know, a shoe, and they're saying, this has been 30 years ago, Joan, and they say, we can make it cheaper, but we can't make it better.
Ah, see?
So the thing about it is that intellectual property, having control of our assets, of the things that we create, and if other people make those same things, they have to pay us a licensing fee for our intellectual property. That's the way it works in Western society.
Yes.
But in China, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West over there, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it. That's a good way to describe it, I think.
And so we do have a problem with that, and that's one of the things that's happening right now. They've gotten so good, Joan, at knocking off our products that even the people who make them here in the United States sometimes have to cut them open to see and analyze them as professionals to tell that they're not our products.
Ooh, that's scary. I did not know that.
I have heard about golf companies having to actually cut their golf clubs open to see what's inside to be able to tell the difference between the knockoffs that they are made in China and that are actually presented as that golf club, not that manufacturer, not a knockoff.
Right.
I'm not talking about a Chinese brand that looks like an American product. I mean one that in every single way looks like it is purported to be that American brand.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the problem we've got, you know, the currency thing, Joan, is a two-edged sword, isn't it? Because when the currency, if we could get the yuan to, am I saying that right? The yuan, I think that's how it's pronounced.
I think so.
If we get the currency to float with the dollar, not be pegged to the dollar, but to float in the open market, I should say, that helps our manufacturers, but it hurts our consumers.
Right.
It's a two-edged sword, isn't it?
Right, and yeah, in currency, there's always an opposite and equal reaction to any action you take.
Exactly, and so, but on the counterfeiting, that's not a two-edged sword. That's clearly something that we've got to get fixed, Joan. But I'll tell you, I don't envy the people in our government who are having to try to negotiate with China, with the Chinese, I should say, not just with China, but with the Chinese, the people who are doing these things, not just the government, but to get the Chinese to stop stealing our stuff.
So you would say that the Chinese are being difficult?
Yeah, they are. And the thing is, Joan, you know, we wouldn't let them come into our warehouses and back a truck up to our warehouse to start unloading our inventory.
Right.
We would call that theft. Well, when they take our intellectual property, it's the same thing.
Well, that's true.
It just looks different. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. We're going to be right back. We've got more to come with our good friend Joan Pride right after these messages. Stay with us. Little Eric Clapton for you there. I think maybe he was with Cream when he did that one. Joan Pride might know that. She's a big Clapton fan, aren't you, Joan?
Oh, totally.
What did you say, Clapton rules?
Well, I remember seeing an old, I don't know, MTV Behind the Music or VH1 Behind the Music show about him. And years and years and years ago when he was first becoming famous, there was, I guess, a lot of people who used to say Clapton is God. And I'm sure they were just joking because it sounds pretty blasphemous. But there would be Clapton is God signs at his concerts
because
his guitar playing was so amazing.
Oh, he is. He's a great guitar. What I like about Clapton is he's a rocker, but he's also a blues man.
Yes,
and I like it when he drops into his blues mode. That's a good one. Joan Pride is our guest, folks. As you know, and as you hear, and as you have already known, she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about China, and you know, the people who are very positive about our ability to compete with China in the long run are the people who give value to, who are the most knowledgeable about the things that Americans do in the 21st century that nobody does better. And that's creating services, creating information, creating technical things, creating intellectual property, and those kinds of things that then can be licensed to other people and that they can use to build things. But that only works if the other people don't steal our information, our intellectual property.
Well, see, that's the problem. It goes back to your point about making ourselves stand out from Chinese products, and we can't if they're going to copy us so well in every aspect of this that you can't see a distinction at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. But here's the thing. It's okay if they make our stuff. It's okay if they make it look just like our stuff, as long as they paid a licensing fee, as long as there's been a business transaction, not a grand larceny transaction.
Right.
Which is what it is.
Yeah, oh, sure.
And I'll tell you one of the things that may have given rise to this, Joan, is I think people in the West are naive about ethics when it comes to people in other parts of the world. And I don't mean this in a derogatory way, folks, but people in other parts who are not part of the Western world, meaning Europe, meaning old Europe, so to speak, and the United States and Canada, and you can include Australia in that, a lot of folks in other parts of the world don't have the same sense of ethics as we do.
Ah.
And when we think that they do, when we anticipate them being as ethical as we are, the way at least let me put it this way, the way we see ethics, the way we understand ethics, when we expect them to do that, we're being naive.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, and so because when they do what they do that you and I think is a breach of ethics, they actually don't think that they've done anything wrong because their sense of ethics is different. And that's the naive part, because what happens is you're dealing with somebody that you like. You know they like you. Maybe you've been in their home, yeah, but they violate our sense of Western ethics, and they don't even know what they've done.
Right. That's a good point.
So that's a naivete that's a naivete that Americans, especially, and Westerners probably, really need to be thinking about.
Well, it's a cultural divide that's hard to get across, I would think.
Exactly. Joan, the other areas are that you talked about. We talked about the currency. That's an issue,
right?
And other areas. Well, can you talk to us about this? About the investor issue, the foreign investor issues. You guys say that they're becoming, the Chinese laws are becoming minefields for foreign investors. Is that where we're worried about the nationalizing of any investment that we might make over there?
Well, yeah, I think, and this is interesting because we say after opening its economy to foreign companies for the last 25 years, there appears to be a backlash now that, you know, local folks are noticing that the Chinese government has given foreign firms, you know, breaks and incentives that they're not getting in their businesses, and they don't like that, so they want a more level playing field.
Also, the environment, too, right?
Oh, in terms of the environment, right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no level playing field in terms of the environment over there.
Right.
Because it doesn't appear to me from the things that I've heard and have read that they're spending as much time and resources on protecting the environment as Americans are required to.
Right.
You know, the new Secretary of Treasury, Paulson, who is it Paulson? Am I saying that right? I think it's Paulson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Environmentally sensitive guy, and that's one of the things he's working on right now. Is to get the Chinese to focus more on making a level playing field. But you know, if we can get the Chinese to be more environmentally sensitive, Joan, it does two things. Number one, it protects our planet, and number two, it does level the playing field for American manufacturers. But Joan, it does a third thing. That goes back to the currency issue, and that is that the more the Chinese spend on their products, the more their products become increase in price, the more it costs the consumer in America to buy those things.
Oh, that makes sense.
So as you said earlier, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, doesn't it?
I made that up.
Yeah, you did. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some legislative forecasts that Kiplinger has to talk about in this week in the Kiplinger letter. Stay with us.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure, as you know. So especially a pleasure when we get to visit with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, in your handy dandy little box here, you talk about some legislative forecasts.
Yes, we do.
And I love
you
the
want
way
the good, the bad, or the ugly.
I love the way you guys net this out here in this little box.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty handy.
You don't have to read a lot of stuff. You just get this shortened to the point.
Exactly. Well, let's take it from the top.
Okay.
Estate tax repeal.
So you want the bad news first?
I'm afraid so.
Okay. It ain't going nowhere, and this is, you know, again, we get unhappy letters from subscribers thinking we're saying we don't want estate tax repeal. It's not what we want or don't want. We're just saying what we think is going to happen, and what we think is going to happen is that it's going to stay bottled up in the Senate.
This is, for the Democrats, Joan, the estate tax is more than just a law about taxes. It's a stake in the ground for them. It's a fighting point for them, isn't it?
Well, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, they say that they don't want a permanent total repeal because they want the very rich to still pay estate taxes.
Right. Well, the reason I say that, Joan, is because the Republicans pulled a stunt. And you know that I said this before. It was nothing more than a political stunt, and I'm telling you, the Republicans did it, where they tried to force the hand of, they tried to present minimum wage, which we're going to talk about in a minute, to try to get minimum wage raised, but they stuck on that a rider that would, if you raise minimum wage, you also repealed the estate tax.
Right, and I'm sure that put a lot of Democrats in a very uncomfortable position because, as you know, raising the minimum wage is something they've wanted to do for such a long time.
Exactly. And so my point is that political stunt, which I wasn't proud of the Republicans for doing.
Really? What it I did, thought that was pretty smart, actually.
Well, as a politician, it might have been.
Yeah.
But for small businesses, it was a very dangerous thing for them to do, and I didn't appreciate it, frankly.
Well, the problem was I think they thought they could win either way. If the estate tax was passed, they felt that they would win. But then you have the increase in the minimum wage that some people would be very unhappy about. But I think they also thought that if this failed, then they could tar the Democrats with the criticism that, well, you voted against, you know, you refused to increase the minimum wage. But I don't think that has actually stuck, so I don't think they got political points from that.
But what you just said is exactly what happened. Now, whether they get any points out of it, I think will remain to be seen over the next couple of months of campaigning as the election, you know, approaches in November.
Right.
But what you just said is exactly what happened. What we found out was, we found out for sure, and it's why I made the statement I did a minute ago, we found out for sure which the Democrats love more than the other. Their baby that they love more than the other baby is estate tax. They love not repealing the estate tax more than they love getting an increase in minimum wage.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but it sure looks that way from the way the vote came out.
Well, that's all I can go by as far as my truth, and as I said, it was a grand and I don't, it'll remain to be seen if it was affected by the Republicans.
Right.
I didn't appreciate it because it played fast and loose with something that I hold as very important to me and to small business owners that I know at least, and that is that we don't need a minimum wage hike, which you guys also point out is not going to happen this year.
Right, and you're certainly not alone in folks who are very upset that the two might have been married and passed together.
Right. Well, the minimum wage, by the way, did I think I read this week, did I read this week that Schwarzenegger, Governor Schwarzenegger of California signed into law an $8 an hour minimum wage for California.
No, I did not see that.
I thought I saw that. At least I think he signed it or he was in the process or could have signed it. And I'm seeing now from my crack research team that they're telling me that it actually he actually did do that. Now that is talk about stupid thing to do for a governor to do, and especially in California where small businesses are already having a hard time. That's the last thing in the world they needed, and it's and we're going to see. I think it's going to provide the world a clinic on the negative impact of a higher minimum wage, Joan.
Can I ask you a question there? Jim?
Yes, go ahead.
Do you bring your crack research team on the road?
Sometimes I do, yes.
Wow, that's
But I actually
good.
I have them in multiple places. See, I have more than I have Hildegard, the crack research team, part of the crack research team, and I have Dave, who's also part of the crack research team. So I've got some good folks around me here.
Stand by,
Joan. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit more of the legislative agenda. We're going to move over to energy. Good news there, folks. 20 Tales, stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, broadcasting live from Houston, Texas, where I'm joining the working with the Association of Small Business Development Centers, an organization that Joan Pride knows well, don't you, Joan?
Yep, you bet.
They're good folks. And by the way, I'll remind you, tomorrow you'll be meeting some of these folks, and I'm looking forward to introducing you to some of these heroes down here. And these are our SBDC folks, ladies and gentlemen, from all over the country. They're all down here. Probably about 1,200 folks down here, I think, altogether. Joan Pride is with Kiplinger Editors. She's senior editor there. And Joan, give us your website, please.
Right. Our website is www.kiplinger.com.
And that's a G, folks, kiplinger.com.
K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. Don't put an S on the end like some people do, Kiplinger.
There you go. There you go.
Go through.
And also, folks, you can check it out and use it. There's a lot of free stuff there. But if you want to know the really deep stuff, you gotta subscribe. And you do that by subscribing. You also get access to their publications, which includes their Washington letter that Joan and I work off of every week, and that's the Kiplinger letter. Now, and by the way, Joan, next week is your 83rd anniversary of the Kiplinger letter.
Well, if you could clarify, I haven't been there for all those 80-some-odd years. But, yeah, that's pretty amazing, I think.
But we're trying to get Mr. Kiplinger, Austin, on, I think.
Oh, I hope you do.
Yep. We're going to get him on, and hopefully next week or the week after. He's a national treasure, isn't he, Joan?
No question about it.
You want to give us that toll-free number?
Absolutely. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And they've got the three biweekly letters, folks, and also the magazine you want to check out. The biweekly letters are the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. Speaking of California, we were just doing that. Joan, in a perfect world, the estate tax would be repealed and minimum wage would go away. It would be repealed too. In a perfect Jim Blassingame's, in the world according to Jim Blassingame, the estate tax would be repealed and the minimum wage would be repealed.
Okay, well, I'm glad you clarified that that's the Jim Blassingame world.
And most small business owners, people who make payroll on Friday, they would agree with me. Joan, let's talk about tax breaks. Are the business tax breaks going to get extended?
Well, finally, yeah, I know it's looking a little dicey, but they will get extended. And what we're talking about is things like the research and development tax credit and also two tax credits that employers get to use if they hired disadvantaged workers.
Right. And, Joan, I know a lot of people who employ the disadvantaged, and they are absolutely many of them have become the backbones of those companies.
Right. Those are great credits, and unfortunately, you know, they expired at the end of last year.
Right.
So when they are continued, and we believe they will be made retroactive to the beginning of the year. Now, I know that doesn't sound like it helps much, but it really does. It's just unfortunate that these things have to lapse and then get retroactively expired.
Joan, I know people who have been employing the disadvantaged for years before there was a tax credit, and they couldn't do without those people. Ladies and gentlemen, I really encourage you to do whatever you can to, if you have an opportunity to hire someone who's disadvantaged, even if you have to spend a little money, if you have to do some things, maybe they're, if they have a hearing challenge or whatever, or a physical challenge of some kind, motor skill, whatever it may be, do it, because you will be amazed at, I think, at the kind of employee that they will be. And I really, tax credits are not, Joan, it's the right thing to do. And it's not only the right thing to do for those employees, it's the right thing to do for your business.
Yes.
And I really encourage you to do that. Joan, the defense authorization you think is going to go through, what about immigration?
Well, we're saying that it's stalled right now, that within the Republican Party there are still enough divisions about do you focus on Homeland Security, or do you focus on the rights of illegal immigrants, or how do you marry the two? It's a very tough issue for them to try to sort through.
The Republicans may rue the day that they stayed divided on that issue.
Ooh, okay.
I think that's going to be an issue. If they don't resolve this before Election Day, before November, Joan, I think that this could be an issue that could contribute to, if they lose the House, this issue could contribute to that, I think.
Well, and we've talked about this, that, you know, one of the backbones of the Republican Party has been the business folks, and they have a point to be made here, which is that, yes, they are employing illegal immigrant workers, but it's because that they need to fill those jobs, and there are not Americans available for those jobs.
Well, and it's not just the... It's not just those H-1B visas.
I'm not talking about H-1B. I'm talking about people who hire illegal immigrants.
Oh, I see what you mean. You're talking about, yeah. And it's an issue, though, Joan, that this country's got to get a grip on. And we need all of our – this is a – Joan, this is a national security issue, not only you know, from a classic national security definition, but also from an economic standpoint, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And so we need to get this thing resolved. And any politicians that are seen as obstructionists, whether Republican or Democrat or mugwumps, whatever party they belong to, Joan, they're gonna pay for that. Joan, let's move down. Offshore drilling, which is going to help us segue into the next thing, which is petroleum. You say that offshore drilling is not going to happen. That bill's not going
to
happen.
Right. There's a big next to that and a big X next to that, and we say because there just isn't a consensus yet.
Well, we need to do two things, Joan, in this country, in America. We need to, as the president said, get off of our addiction to oil, which is a technology issue.
Right.
But we also need to get off of our addiction to foreign oil, which could be an offshore drilling issue.
Oh, I see.
And also the ANWR, Alaska National Wildlife Reserve.
That's another whole
Joan,
issue, sure.
Here's where you do the little Bambi and Thumper thing, Joan.
I'm ready.
You know, this is not going to hurt the antelope with the little seagulls or the little rabbits up there, folks. So anyway, stand by. Greeny Joan and I will be right back after these messages. It's Tintail. Stay with us. We're going to talk about petroleum right after these messages.
Trouble.
Sweet Baby James.
And you need a helping hand.
You're down in trouble and you need a helping hand. Well, you know, folks, all you got to do is listen to the Small Business Advocate Show, or go to my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, and I think you'll find a friend. Not only a friend, you'll find lots of friends, including me and my Brain Trust members, which includes our good friend and our guest this hour, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, you're a friend of small business, aren't you?
You bet.
You
I cover small business for the Kiplinger Letter.
Exactly. You care about us, don't you, Joan?
Sure do.
You love us.
Just a little bit about it.
You love us, don't you, Joan?
Always.
Yeah, and even me, right?
Well, let's not get crazy here.
Joan, let's move over and talk about, we were talking about offshore drilling and that's not going to happen, which we sorely needed to happen. Oh, by the way, Joan, did you see where, I think it was BP or Shell or somebody found a new field in the Gulf of Mexico?
In the Gulf, right.
That could be an incredible find.
And it's a huge, huge amount, too. I forget how much. And it wouldn't, like, end our dependence on foreign oil, but it sure would cut back tremendously.
Well, Joan, here's another thing that I've been reading about recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we think that the oil came from dinosaurs, right? You know, with the dinosaurs that rotted and became oil.
Sure,
and all that
if you
stuff.
Say so, sure.
Some people believe that the Earth makes this stuff. That it's not. They think that this new petroleum is not from dinosaurs.
So it wouldn't be a fossil fuel?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's why they call it a fossil fuel.
Well, there's one guy, and I'm going to get him on the show, who thinks the Earth makes this stuff.
Ooh.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting concept. But, Joan, I wonder if this new find had anything to do with the price of oil coming down the last 30 days over $10 a barrel.
I had not heard that. I mean, I've watched the news where they're discussing that. They haven't listed that as a reason, but I don't see why it couldn't be.
Well,
it sounds
like
it was sort of a perfect storm of a lot of events that caused the price to come down.
Count on me to think about something like that, Joan.
But
I have that kind of mind. But, Joan, a month ago, oil was at $77 a barrel, record high in terms of dollars, not adjusted for inflation, but in terms of dollars. Record high, now it's below $64.
And it's the drop is like some kind of historic, it's record-breaking how fast it's come down so far. And it's still going. It's going to keep going.
Right. And, Joan, this is good news for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But especially the Republicans.
Oh, sure. Well, that's exactly right.
Think about the impact
that
this could have. But, Joan, one of the things on the election, this is another one of those things could have an impact on the elections. But, Joan, think about this. If the oil prices have come down that much in 30 days, that has nothing to do with supply and demand. It has nothing. It has absolutely everything to do with the speculation issue.
Exactly, which kind of makes me mad.
Which makes you mad, and if you remember, Joan,
prices have come down, but that means probably that they could have come down a long time ago, except for the speculators.
Exactly, and Joan, I had Steve Forbes and one of our economists, Richard DeKayser, 2 years ago. Both of them said on this show that maybe as much as 25% of the price of oil is speculation. Maybe only 3/4 of the price of oil is actually supply and demand.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's a lot. It is a lot. But, Joan, I also wonder if, and by the way, Joan, another thing that's happened and that our friend Charles Cadillac mentioned this week, gold prices. Have you seen what's happened to gold?
Isn't that coming down too?
It's below 600. It was over 700.
Wow.
So, see, that's good news for inflation.
Oh, definitely.
Because gold is the inflation standard, isn't it?
Yeah, and the stock market has been noticing all of this.
Exactly. So gold's coming down, oil's coming down, the stock market's going up. Tell me why that isn't a good economy, Joan. That doesn't bode well for a future a good economy.
Well, it sure does. It sure does sound good.
Well, it sure seems like that to me. And so folks, if you hear people saying the economy is bad, ask them what game they're watching. Because, Joan, they're not watching the same game I'm watching.
Well, it may be that their local economy is bad.
Well, and that happens. I know some local economies that are not great either.
I
certainly do, and there's some of those out there like that. But in terms of the national economy, but then, Joan, then we get back into all politics are local, right?
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Jim.
I've enjoyed having you on the show again, as always.
Thank you.
And
we'll see you in Houston.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm signing off from Houston just for today, though. As you know, I'm broadcasting from the annual conference of the Association of Small Business Development Centers in Houston, Texas. Houston, I'll be here again tomorrow, and I'll be introducing you to some of the people who are attending this conference. I can't wait to introduce you to them. They're good folks, very important people in the lives of small businesses in America. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.